Hi everyone, Alan here, founding Burundi. On June 28, Burundi's new president, Major General Evariste Ndayishimiye, unveiled his inaugural cabinet. 15 members, 10 new names, and 5 returning, meaning people who had served in the Nkurunziza administration. 5 of the 15 members are women, or about 30%, which meets the minimum requirement that was set by the constitution. Of course, earlier it had been announced that the president had nominated Alain Guillaume Bunyoni as the prime minister and Prosper Bazombanza as the vice president. And this is Burundian politics, so a lot of people had a lot of things to say and a lot of mixed feelings, especially by the appointment of Bunyoni as the prime minister. When the names of the cabinet were announced, two things stood out for me. One, the appointment of two members of government who are under sanctions from the United States. I'm talking about, of course, the Prime Minister, Bunyoni himself, and Minister of Interior, Community Development and Public Security, Gervais Ndirakobucha. The second thing was the historical nature of the appointment of Imelda Sabushimike, the first woman from the Bato community to serve in government at a ministerial level, which, you know, is fantastic and long overdue. But like many Burundians, I wanted to find out what we can expect from this group of people that's going to be leading us for the next 7 years or so. So I called upon psychologist, entrepreneur, and author Reynolds Butari to help answer some of the questions I have. Welcome to Finding Burundi, Reynolds.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for the invitation.
No, of course, I'm glad to have you here. I'm excited to go through this. So let's talk about highlights. So I just talked about things that stood out for me. What was your first reaction to the names you saw? Is there anything that surprised you? What do you think are the strengths, weaknesses of this new group?
So first, not to play smart or not to be playing know-it-all, I was really not surprised. And by the way, what really surprised me was the reaction of many Burundians, because they really thought, like when he said he wanted peace and dialogue, they expected him to put other people representing peace and dialogue for him to renew the image or the bad picture they had, right? But if you look things into the root, into reality, into deeply how that government was structured, right?
Right.
Yeah, let's use structure as the word. Huh? So Bunyoni is the person who we would call a hardliner. He was one of those people who would tell Nkurunziza, you know, when he said I want this third term, he was the one reminding him that also Museveni is there for like 20 years more. Kagame has been around for like 15 years and more. So Bunyoni was the one giving hopes, courage to Nkurunziza. Right. It's no wonder that Ndayishimiye took him as a prime minister, because he got even those sanctions from what they did when forcing the third mandate. So in a way, he was thanking them for their contribution. You know, when they say Chara Tubunye, like it means we have been through many things, we have suffered a lot to enjoy this power. So like now they really are like, Nkurunziza is dead. Who will reassure us that we keep the same strength, the same influence we had while he was alive? So that's why I was not really that much surprised, because he really appointed people who forced the third term mandate.
Great. And so you weren't surprised by the nomination of Bunyoni and the new Minister of Interior. How about other names that are on there? So one thing that surprised me, I mean, I was when it surprised me, I had to check myself as to why I'm surprised. So I went through the list of I got some bios of the ministers, and one thing that kept coming up was that it appeared to me that politics aside, these people seemed qualified to lead the various ministries that they've been given. And then I kept wondering why I'm surprised by that. You know, like names like Domitian de Okubayo seems quite qualified.
Yeah, I mean, technically they are all qualified to do what they were appointed to do.
Right. And there's a part of me that was wondering why I'm surprised that these names appear to be competent.
Yes.
And so I wonder whether in appointing this cabinet, do you feel that there was an effort to balance out between holding on to power and delivering for Burundians?
You know, something that people have ignored too much is that even since Burundi is as power, they have always taken the Rwanda government and the Ugandan government as a model.
Right.
That's even why they forced the third mandate, because they were just looking at what other people were doing. They were still there for years and stuff like that. I have explained that on the first question. So when you look at Museveni, for example, he appoints people for the security and he put the hardliners for the security issues, and he appoints technical people for the technical issues. When you look at Kagame in Rwanda, he does the same. He really put hardliners for the security issues, and he put very competent people for the social things, for economic, financial stuff. He really put people who will be into finance. So they just copy-pasted what is done in the East African area, at the exception, of course, of Tanzania and Kenya.
Yeah. Right. Okay, now let's move on to a few other things that are going to be coming up soon. This government has a lot of things to do. In other words, they have their work cut out for them. So we have the relationship, Burundi's relationship or lack thereof with our neighbor, especially Rwanda. We have the global pandemic that's going on right now. I personally was surprised to listen to the speech that Neva made on the day of the swearing-in ceremony, outlining the priorities that this government was going to, things that this government was going to prioritize, including the fight against COVID-19. We've since seen three testing centers in Buja, and we're seeing more updates from those centers, which is something that we hadn't seen before. We're now starting to see Kagame say nice things about Burundi and this new government. And so what do you expect? What has changed, first of all? Why the sudden change?
Everyone knows what we do call the elephant in the room, but no one wants to acknowledge it. What changed is the leader of the country. When it was Nkurunziza's term thing, when he was forcing it, because even when he before the third term, everything was good in the country. Burundi was renowned internationally. When you take Burundi before 2015 and Burundi after 2015, we may see that something wrong happened, right? So now that the picture, as in literally the picture we see when we enter an office in Burundi. You see the picture of the president when you enter in any office in Burundi.
Right.
That picture has changed. And since it has changed, things will change worldwide. What do I mean by that? First, they have seen what happens when you isolate yourself from the international community. In just 5 years, Burundi became the poorest country in the whole entire world. When they arrived on power in 2005, Burundi was around the 30th country, the poorest 30th country. Like we were 30 on the poorest countries. Now we are the first country. In just 5 years, we managed to be the first poorest country in the whole world. And they have seen what is the cost of being isolated, or what is the cost of rebelling against the international community. So Ndayishimiye, from some sources I have, is that he has been doing what we do call an underground diplomacy. He has been doing some contacts with Rwandan government, with Museveni's government. I don't know much about Kenya, but already Kenya was in good terms with them and Tanzania. And I know that Congo will follow the region. They will follow what mainly Uganda and Rwanda say. So Ndayishimiye has played a good card with doing those underground diplomacy thing. And yeah, now you see, for example, this thing called OIF, Francophonie, Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie. They have opened the gate of funding for him.
Right, and who, right.
Yeah, and who is the leader of Francophonie? It is that Rwandan former minister, former foreign minister. So they are giving them what we would call good signs or approach, signs of approach. Like, okay, we open this goodwill for you. We open money for you. We open grants for you, for your government. So now what will you give in return? So the whole world really is waiting to see what he is able to do.
And what do you think he will have to give? Because obviously something other than him not being Nkurunziza will have to give. And what do you think that would be?
Okay, the fault of Nkurunziza was obviously tearing the Arusha agreement down. Because the Arusha agreement was an East African thing. It was imposed by East Africa. They imposed the sanction of Amerigo to Buyoya's power. Till he decided to give them power on peace without any fight, right? So Murunziza's fault was to tear Arusha down. So I don't think the world wants Ndayishimiye to bring back Arusha. No, no. I think they want him to bring what we would call peace and stability. That we would hear less about killings, about kidnapping, about rape, that would hear less about seizing every business thing in Burundi. I mean, they want from him peace and stability. First, as in Burundi should stop being the wrong model, the bad model of what's happening in Africa. Whenever you talk about Africa, is famine, malaria, and Burundi is actually the archetype of what is being said bad about Africa. So they expect from him to bring peace and stability, not even economic growth. Economic growth is expected from the people suffering from poverty. But the whole world expects from him stability first, and stop killing, stop shaming us as African people. And I may also say, from the neighbors, of course, they expect him to give those FDL which are in the bush. Burundi is helping Rwanda's enemy. They are helping those groups, those rebel groups. So I think they expect him to first stop helping them or to hand them over or to calm them down. Yeah.
Right, right. And so one of the things that I kept seeing, I saw like a number of articles written mm-hmm. about this, the inclusion of security personnel in the cabinet, like I talked about before, with Winyoni and the interior minister. I was seeing some analysts calling this a wartime cabinet. I have a few questions about that because I'm wondering, is this new for a Burundian government? I'd never really dived into Nkurunziza's cabinet,
no.
So I don't know who was in it. So maybe you can let us know whether this is something
yeah.
that is new.
So I don't know how your audience is. If they are Burundian, maybe they will get to know
Burundian.
What I say. Yeah,
right.
And if they are foreigners, maybe they will also deep inside what dig and dig deeper. And we come to know what I mean by what I'm going to say.
Mm.
Burundian, all Burundian, any Burundian you know is a dangerous person. Okay. that cabinet, yes, is made of Unioni and the Kugarika. And yes, what they did is wrong. But I am going to say two things. Don't think I am protecting them or trying to. I don't know the word in English, but let's take it like this, right? First, when explorers came in Burundi, the colonizers, they said of Burundian that we were the people with weapons, where like any Burundian couldn't go without a spear or something to defend himself. So deep down, any Burundian knows that the neighbor is a dangerous person, that you should always be having a spear with you, right?
I don't know how I feel about that, because I'd never thought of that. I'd never thought of us in that way.
No, we are like that. Look, since the independence, we are just fighting each other. Either Tutsi or Tutsi between themselves, or Hutu between themselves, or the two ethnic group clashing. And when we stop fighting between ourselves, we will actually go to Tanzania, take back the Buha and the Bugufi. You know Burundian, you know how they are. They are very, very dangerous people. As a people, they are dangerous. So now he appointed people who are known of what they actually did. Right? And I may say that it was first it was a strategic move. Why? Because they want first, they are craving power. Those people were like the deep state government of Burundi. Like whatever happens, people were saying, it is Bunyoni, it is Ndakugarika, it is this general so-and-so, right? Whatever thing happened was the cause was a general in the dark shadow somewhere hiding who did that or who ordered this thing. Whenever there is a kidnapping or a corruption case issue, there would always come up a name of a general, right? So putting them in the light, giving them responsibility, brings something new and good for Burundi. What? It is accountability. Whatever will now happen, we will know who did it. It won't be some general somewhere hiding in an office who we don't know what he did. It will be an order directly done by this and so, and we will know what happened. This is the good thing about naming or appointing those people to jobs that are public and to responsibility, that we will know what happened. That us as Burundian, and you know how we are dangerous. You know our people. Now they have power, and if they do it openly, not hiding as a deep state government, hiding somewhere, if they are doing wrong openly, one day, sooner or later, they will pay for it. They know, we know, you know, right? So this is a good thing that he is actually appointing them, because now no one is hiding. There is no deep state, blah, blah, blah. No, it's them. They are there. We see. So the second thing is that they are also craving the prestige of being a minister. they want people to be applauding them. And, you know, it's a psychological thing that when you are on a public office, you tend to do good things instead of bad things because you still want those people to applaud you. So it is a good thing for Burundian that those killers are now in a public place, because whatever we'll do will be documented, we will know, and they will pay if they do bad. No matter the time, it may take long or it may be soon, we don't know. But it's a good thing that they are appointed, and it's a good thing that they are in a position where they will be more incentivized to do good things.
To do good for the people.
Yeah. Right.
And so is this the first time that we've seen members of the security forces in public positions? Because I couldn't understand why this was news. And this is my own ignorance, because I never followed closely what, you know, Nkurunziza did in the last 15 or so years.
No, it is not the first time they appoint governors of province as military people. But I think people are like, why does he do this when we are not in war? Because when Buyoya was doing it, we were fully in war, civil war, everyone fighting each other, you know. And whenever that thing was happening, it was because of a situation on which we were in. So the thing is, why does he now bring those war people or civil war cabinet? I call it a civil war cabinet, not even a war cabinet. Why does he bring them on public, as we may say it, while the opposition is not having a fight? So is he preparing for a fight or not? That's why there is a question. But the question is not it is the first time it happens. The question is the context does not fit on it happening now.
Right. I thought that it might be an issue of sending a message to potentially to potential rebel groups, saying that we're prepared. I feel like the shadow of 2015 and the attempted coup, those are things that they probably still think about and are preparing to sort of send a warning message.
If that was the intention, really, you know, Burundian, those rebels, they are not scared about whoever you appoint. They already know who was on power, who was the most influential people. They already knew those generals. So you're giving those generals those position is not a game changer for the rebels. And maybe he wanted to discourage people who would want to become rebels, but not those who already became one.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, so we can't discuss this cabinet without discussing the historical nature of Imeld Sabushimike. She is the first minister from the Twa community, the first female, the first woman minister to come from that community. And so there was a lot of applause from all corners of the internet when the name came up, because it's obviously good that we are including the Twa community in leadership positions. I saw your article about her in Iwachu the other day. And so how important is this moment for that community?
For me, it is a how do you say it? Better late than sooner, than never. Sorry,
right.
Better late than never. It's good that they did it, and they should have done it even since 2005 or even before. And I think it's a great thing for their community. I mean, I am not part of their community, but I guess if I was from a community which was put aside for so long, I would be proud of that person chosen. And if I wasn't proud, I would just be jealous that I was not the one chosen. See what I mean? If I was somewhere sitting in Bujumbura, I would just be jealous. Like, I have been at school. Why not me?
Right, you see? Right.
But yes. So, I was saying, if I was at Twa sitting somewhere, I would just be jealous of that woman. But deep inside, I would be happy that someone representing my community is having a position, a big position, by the way. It is gender and equality position. And actually, she is a Mutwa who was discriminated for so long, and she gets the equality ministry, which is good.
Right.
And people have tried to make it an issue about her speech, her broken French speech. But my contribution to that debate is that as Burundian, we are allowed to be laughing only to people who can defend themselves, who are in a position to defend themselves. I mean, you don't make jokes about an orphan, for example.
Right.
Or if he's an orphan, you don't make a joke about an orphan being an orphan. You would maybe make jokes about how he's late. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That the speech, the whole thing was, why are people laughing about this poor Mutwa woman? And others were actually making the speech about her not speaking proper good French, which for me is not an issue. I mean, you can be a minister without Obama. Obama only spoke one language, and I think he was competent. For me, even the language she spoke was not even the issue. The issue for me was, is she still this small Mutwa person without defense? Or are we going to consider her as a minister and treat her like a minister? And in our country, when you are a minister, we not only respect you and give you all the privilege, we also laugh at you when you put a bad uniform, when you put shoes with yellow lacet. You see what I mean? So we will just keep laughing at any person on power. Right. And my point on that debate was, if you don't want us to be laughing at her, then you are denying the fact that she's a minister. Yeah, that was my point.
Right. So I want to finish off on looking at a long term. Anytime a new administration comes in, they're always coming with pump and euphoria and a lot of energy in the beginning, and they announce all these things that they're going to do, which we've already kind of started to see with this new administration. And so, but I'm always wondering how long that honeymoon phase is going to last.
Yeah. I personally hope it will last as long as possible. Because we as a people, we have suffered.
I know. Me too. That's why I have this hope, sense of hope that, and it's true, I really want these guys to succeed, because that means Burundians are succeeding. That means a lot of people can go back home. That means Burundians are progressing like the rest of the world. And so, from what you've observed so far and your knowledge on Burundian politics and history, what do you think we can expect as a Burundi from Ndayishimiye and his team?
We have three scenarios. The first scenario is Ndayishimiye keeps up the challenge he has now about bringing peace and stability. I know from many sources that the rebel groups are ready to stop training, actually. Not even fighting, training. You see what
I
mean?
Yeah, that's
so
big.
They are ready to stop anything they were doing, ready to stop buying weapons and preparing those things they were preparing. We all know that those people were getting ready of anytime something happens. So that we know. So if Ndayishimiye keeps up the good work, if he puts into practice the speech he made during the when he was doing the speech when he became president, if he really puts into the word that speech he made into practice, then it's good. We will have a peaceful country, because either way, this whole crisis started because of the third mandate, just someone wanting to stay in power. So if he actually leads the country in a good way, in a non-divisive manner, it will be good. Everything will go okay. So we have a second scenario. Things goes like it was before. Right?
Great.
Let's say things stay like it is, like all this divisive speech. They keep killing people, like this Kame program they have of taking this one, then that one. This oppression keeps going. Then you have these rebels who will get not power, but they will get a big support. From who? They may get support from people who are disappointed with this electoral process, that they have cheated. They have won. I mean, we all know they have cheated. So you will have those who feel cheated. You will have those who really want a change and expected it now. They will all be supporting those who are ready to use force to make things change by force. The scenario of if things keep the way they were.
Right.
So we have a third scenario, which I would call the Burundian scenario. You have Ndayishimiye who would only call the Kondeurs, those who were in the DD system, who went in 2015, Rajabu and those who are in Europe and whatever. And he only calls them just to strengthen his own political party, and he leaves the others outside of the country, right?
Right.
So that third scenario is the same. We will start to see a kind of political assassination, stuff like that.
Mm.
So they have to play it very smart, because as a group, as a political group, they have missed what I call, they have missed their historical moment, which was 2015. They don't have the support of the international community. Now the opposition is the one which has the ear and the support of the international community. They have missed that. So with this cheating of the electoral process, they have missed also the ear and support of the Burundian people. Because in 2015, when this demonstration happened, it was virtually in just one province, which is Bujumbura, and maybe two or four upcountry, but which was not as a bigger mobilization. So now you would have all the country knowing that you did cheat the election and against you. So that the third thing would only buy them just some time. Like it would buy them maybe 3 years. The first scenario would maybe take 2 years. And the second, which is good for every one of us, would make them last longer.
Right, right. Well, Reynolds, thank you so much for coming on to Finding Burundi and sharing your insight on this topic. Just want to remind everybody that Reynolds is, besides being a psychologist and an entrepreneur, he's also a published author and has a book out called Lucid Love, Live a Romantic Relationship in a Practical World. You can find the book on Amazon, so go out and buy it and support your fellow Burundian. So I look forward to reading your book, Renan. So again, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you
show.
For the invitation.
Yeah, of course. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, bye.
And